Welcome to The Lobbying Show, a podcast about the people in government relations, how they got into it, what their jobs entail, what works, and what doesn't. I'm your host, Jim O'Brien. So we continue our California journey and sit down with Sarah Sheehy, the Senior Director of Government and Public Affairs for the Hollywood Burbank Airport. This is one of five airports in the LA area, and this airport is about the same size as the airport that serves the entire state of Connecticut. Our interview with Sarah almost didn't happen. On the day of the interview, her daughter was homesick from school, and so Sarah obviously couldn't come meet us in downtown LA. However, we packed up our mobile studio and we set it up at Sarah's kitchen table, and we did the interview right there in Sarah's kitchen. As we talked with Sarah, I was struck by how similar so many of our guest paths are, but yet how each one is also very different. I think the one common denominator is that they, like Sarah, sought out some opportunities, said yes to the crazy jobs or tasks that were asked of her, and then worked very, very hard at getting the job done. Sarah has obviously worked very, very hard. She got her career. She started at Shulman Communications and learned a lot there. She went on to work at where else but Sorrell Associates, like so many other people in LA. She went on to the California Grocers Association and Mattel. She is very good at what she does. We really enjoyed sitting down with her. She is also a graduate of Santa Clara University and has her master's in public policy from UCLA. Obviously, very bright. So we really enjoyed sitting down with Sarah, and we hope you enjoy the interview. So we are here in LA with Sarah Sheehy of the Burbank Airport. And Sarah is the head of public affairs for the airport. Mm-hmm. And we have to say that, we have to confess, we did not fly into Burbank just because we had a direct flight.
We're working on that. More nonstops.
Well, and we are here in LA, and we're not at the Burbank Airport because Sarah has a sick child.
Yeah.
So we are recording this from her home. And so you may hear some coughing in the background, which is the sick child who is home for the day. Hopefully she's not. Hopefully she's doing better.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
So Sarah. So thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for coming here. Actually.
Well, this has worked out.
And for being flexible, I appreciate it.
Well, we love LA. We love the weather. Sunny and 70 degrees almost every day. Yeah. So Sarah, why don't we just start with where you grew up? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Thousand Oaks for the first 10 years of my life, which is about 45 minutes from center of LA in the Conejo Valley.
Okay. And where are we now, actually? Where do you live? What part of LA?
Just east of Culver City. The neighborhood is called Baldwin Vista.
Okay. It's a great neighborhood.
Thanks.
Looking up at the hills of
yes,
LA.
Yes, Baldwin Hills is what you're looking up at.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And Councilman Herb Wesson's district.
Okay. Perfect. We like that.
And Karen Bass, Congressman Karen Bass.
Okay.
Yeah. She lives up the street.
And then where'd you go to high school?
I did 2 years in Baltimore at Seton Keough High School, which is an all-girls Catholic school.
Okay.
And then my dad was transferred when I was 16. He was transferred back to California, and I went to Lorena High School, which is in Thousand Oaks, another all-girls Catholic high school.
Okay. And college?
I went to Santa Clara University.
Great.
Jesuit.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And did you like it?
Yes, I loved it. Santa Clara was at the time, I think now it's changed considerably. It was a little more of a commuter school at the time. So I actually did 2 years there and then did a year and a half away. I did different programs. I did a internship with Congressman Brad Sherman in D.C. I did a study abroad program in London, and then I did another internship at the White House under President Bill Clinton. And then I came back, and I had 2 quarters left, and then I graduated.
So what year did you have your first internship?
That would have been...
Were you a sophomore or junior?
Junior, yes.
Junior, okay. Mm-hmm. And was that in California or in Washington,
D.C.? Nope, in Washington, D.C.
And did you get credit?
Yes. Yes, I was a political science major and a business minor and a musical theater minor.
Okay. Well, and how did you get the internship?
I think the White House one I just applied. I think it was a program with American University. And so we actually stayed on campus there.
Okay.
And I think you had to find your own internship. And I think there was a White House internship application process. I think I just applied and I got it. So I worked in the Office of Public Liaison.
In the White House.
Mm-hmm. Which was so fun.
And that was your second internship?
That was the first internship. Okay. That was my junior year.
So you did the American University program in Washington, D.C. You lived on campus. You took maybe one class there?
I think I wrote a thesis. I had to write a thesis. Don't ask me what it was.
and you worked 40 hours a week, a normal work week?
Yeah.
At the White House?
Yeah.
So you were working, your office was in the executive office building next to the White House?
It was. Mm-hmm. And then I got shipped off to do, the Office of Public Liaison was hosting some type of social function, so they needed extra interns, so I got shipped over to the social office, I forget what it's called now. So okay. I actually got to work in the White House a couple days.
Oh, that's
so
great.
It was pretty cool.
So here
it
you are, a junior in college,
all
the way from California, and you're working in the White House.
In a suit. California, we don't wear suits typically.
We don't see a lot of ties in California. I don't think I've seen one yet.
And in DC, it's really different.
Yes, a little bit more formal.
I remember going suit shopping with my mom before I left. We had to buy all these suits.
That's great. And so what do you remember about the internship, or what did you like about it?
So I remember that my boss at the time, I want to say her name was Barbara Woolley, but that might be wrong.
Okay.
She had to take not a leave of absence, but she had a family emergency, and so she left for a few weeks. But it was right around Christmas time, and there were all these invitations that needed to go out to take a tour of the White House Christmas trees or something like that inside the White House. And I was tasked all of a sudden with handling who got an invite, how many they got. With very little instruction, I just sort of had to figure it out. And I was on my own. It was probably the last 3 weeks of my internship. And I basically, it was me in the Office of Public Liaison.
And you got to decide who was going to get an invitation and who didn't.
Mm-hmm. It was crazy. It was crazy. That's what I remember the most about it. It was really fun, though. It was really fun.
It's so incredible how, on the outside, you think that something like this would, you know, have such a process set up and have such a vetting, and yet, you know, the boss leaves for some type of emergency, mm-hmm. and it just gets dumped in an intern's lap, mm-hmm. and here you are, mm-hmm. deciding how it's going to happen, who's going to get invited.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, interns, you learn in DC, are very critical. You know, these offices don't have the staffing budgets to really staff up like they probably need to.
Right.
So interns really can play a critical role. And it was a really fun experience. It was great.
So you did that for a semester.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many people we interview who, I mean, it's almost unanimous that their first experience in government or campaigns is an internship.
Yes.
And so it's a great way to get a foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
What about your second internship?
Well, so then I studied abroad in London, and my second internship was that summer. I was going back and forth between entertainment and politics, and so I actually did an internship on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Wow.
Yes, I was assisted, one of the segment producers.
And how was that?
Oh, it was great. I mean, Jay Leno is one of the nicest people you will ever come into contact with. So what you saw on TV is what you got. It was just fun to see. And, you know, whenever a segment producer, I mean, you don't always produce a segment every show.
Okay.
But when he was, you know, when it was his segment, I mean, it was very hands-on. So that was exciting too. And again, it's another avenue. I think The Tonight Show now might have a more formalized internship process. They did have a formalized internship process at the time. But for a myriad of different reasons, I couldn't make it for the interview or something like that. So I didn't get into the formalized group. But then some of the segment producers who didn't have budgets for an assistant wanted interns, and I made it into that pile, which actually ended up being, so I didn't get lunches and I didn't get coffee. I was doing research to try to figure out what cool, interesting segments can we bring to The Tonight Show. So again, I kind of got lucky, but it was a really good experience.
And so you weren't paid. And
nope.
So, and because you were not part of the formal process, it sounds like it almost worked out better.
Mm-hmm. I think experience-wise, it did.
How'd you end up getting the job? I mean, they must have had a stack of resumes.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, my poor mom, I feel like what happened is I was in London and I got called for like a phone interview. Mm-hmm. And my mom, yeah, I'm the oldest of six kids, so she had a lot on her plate. And she was like, she's not here. Can I take a message? And then she said, oh, hold on, I have a call waiting. And they just hung up. And I never got another call again. But I think that clearly my resume was impressive enough that I moved over to a different pile than Steve Ridgway. That was his name. He called me and he said, I'd like you to come be my intern. You won't be part of the formal process. You'll be my intern. And I said, great. That sounds fun.
That's great.
That's how I'm going to spend my summer.
Your mom put the Tonight Show on hold.
She did.
Well, with five other kids, you can understand.
She did.
It was a doctor of the school or whatever it may be.
Yes, she did. She did.
And then you had an internship on the Hill.
And then, so right after that, I was supposed to go back to Santa Clara, but Leon Panetta is a graduate of Santa Clara.
Okay.
And he started the Panetta Institute out of Cal State Monterey Bay. And he was doing a scholarship program, and it was the inaugural year, and he had a student from every Cal State school and one from Santa Clara. So last minute, I applied. I was supposed to be an RA. I mean, I was literally weeks away from going back to campus, having not been there for a full year. And they said, okay, you're it, you're going. And so that was cool because it was 2 weeks in Cal State Monterey Bay with Leon Panetta, just giving you every wisdom, every piece of political wisdom you ever wanted to hear, teaching all the courses. I mean, it was just like a very intensive 2 week process that was, he's just phenomenal. And then we had a social event at his house. I mean, it was incredible. And then we went to D.C. and we got internships on the Hill. So I worked for Congressman Brad Sherman. And I did that for the full semester. But then we would have like speaker series. So that was when I got to go into the Oval Office because he just knew. I mean, he had so many contacts and we were sort of the inaugural class.
Right.
So I think even on the Santa Clara website, it says something like I was the first or the inaugural Panetta Scholar.
And what year was that?
Senior year. So that was my first semester senior year.
Okay. And where are we in the Clinton administration? What year in the Clinton? Where?
So I graduated in, 99.
Okay.
So last.
Okay.
Very end.
Okay. And he had left the administration at this point.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And you enjoyed that internship?
Yes.
Also? It sounds like you did, yeah.
Yes. I mean, Leon Panetta is just, I mean, I always follow him. Anything he writes, I read. He's just such a profound influence, I think, in federal politics.
So he clearly made a great impression on you because at the end of this, you decided to pursue more of a public policy path rather than an entertainment path? No?
I decided, I really didn't know. And I actually ended up doing entertainment for the first year, 2 years.
What'd you do?
I worked at Artisan Entertainment. I started as an assistant like everybody does. I think I did home entertainment marketing.
Okay.
They were just coming off the Blair Witch Project, so it was a, you know, sort of an up-and-coming studio. Learned a lot.
So for our listeners who don't know, Artisan Entertainment is a studio.
Yes, but now it's Lionsgate.
Okay. And at the time, they were a smaller studio. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I did that for a year and then I worked at Miramax and I did theatrical publicity. I did Oscar campaigns actually. And
did you work on any?
I did. I worked on Chicago, which won Best Picture. I worked on In the Bedroom, which was sort of an up and coming.
Yeah.
They didn't think it would get as far as it did. And you'd be amazed. Oscar campaigns are very much like political campaigns.
Very similar.
Very similar.
Okay. Well, tell us, give us kind of the rundown of what an Oscar campaign is like.
So, I mean, you know, Harvey Weinstein, they say, is one of the brainchilds of the Oscar campaign movement.
Okay.
You have a block of voters. I mean, they have different categories. You could be SAG, you could be Directors Guild, you could be, you know, whatever. But they all get directors vote on best director, actors vote on best actor,
right.
But they all get sort of a best picture vote.
Okay.
So you have this block and it's basically, okay, where are they? If they're older, retired, they're probably in Palm Springs, which is why you do the Palm Springs Film Festival is in January, right?
Okay.
Before Oscar voting time. You go up to Santa Barbara, you kind of pick, and there's influencers and thought leaders that you will put one of your actors in the room for that, for an interview or a meet and greet or something like that. And I was an assistant, so I was very low level. But I mean,
you had a front seat to all of it.
I had a front seat and I would be in the office till midnight just doing schedules for talent, arranging cars. I mean, they're on the go, literally on the go for months leading up to the
actual
Academy
voting.
Awards. Yeah.
And how big is the audience? How many voters?
I have no idea. I wouldn't even try to guess. I in the thousands.
Okay.
But I don't know how many members there are.
So a mini political campaign.
It really was. But I worked really hard. And at one point, to the point of burnout and, you know, sort of, I didn't have a bad experience, but all the things they say about assistants in Hollywood, it's a thankless job. I mean, it is.
Is it really?
Yeah. So, and you don't get paid very much. And so I think at one point I remember saying, I like politics. I'm done. If I'm going to work 80 hours a week, it is not going to be for Harvey Weinstein. And right. I quit. I just quit. I just left. And that's when I decided to go back to get my master's in public policy. And that's when I started politics.
And how long did you do that for in the entertainment for artisan?
So 2.5 years.
Okay. Did you meet any stars?
Oh, yes.
Oh, all of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's great. And that wasn't enough to, you know, those one brief moments are not enough to sustain you for low pay and 80 hours a week and
no
pat on the back. And
no. Yeah, no.
Okay.
I have been to the Golden Globes after parties, though, and I've been to the Academy Awards after parties. I can say that.
And are they fun or not?
Yeah, they're fun. Although when you're working it,
I was going
to
say
you don't really get to do much.
Yeah, you're there. Yeah.
But I was at the party where Calista Flockhart and Harrison Ford met.
Well,
I saw it happen.
You didn't provide the introduction. Did
you? Oh no, lowly assistant.
So after 2.5 years of that, you decide you want to go back into politics.
Yep.
And how did you do that?
I went to UCLA. I got my master's in public policy.
Wow.
It was a full-time 2-year program.
Okay, and then after that,
I started at LAUSD. I had Michael Dukakis comes and teaches a class to undergrad and graduate students to get out of Boston for the winter. And he still does it. I've seen him in Costco.
Does he really?
He still does. I saw him maybe last winter randomly in Costco. And I said hello and introduced him to my family and said, you know, you taught me at this point, I don't know, maybe it was 10 years ago. So yeah, he was great. So we just really got along, and he provided an introduction for me at LAUSD, and I started actually working sort of in teacher training because I thought my policy concentration was education.
Okay.
And then from there, I ended up working for the head of external affairs for LAUSD.
Okay, and LAUSD, tell us a little bit about that.
Los Angeles Unified School District. It's one of the largest school districts in the nation. At the time, it had probably just over 700,000 students. Now it's drastically decreased. It's a little over 600,000.
Okay.
But it It's huge. It's huge. So my boss at the time worked directly for the superintendent, who was former Colorado Governor Roy Romer.
Oh, okay.
So I did that. And from there, we ran a bond campaign that was, I want to say, $3.7 billion to build new schools and update infrastructure and seismic updates and that kind of thing. And that was sort of my first informational bond campaign that I did for the district. We had hired a consultant to run the campaign for us, and that's how I met John Shulman, which is then how I...
And then you went there.
He asked me to come work for him.
And so then you started at the a campaign consulting
firm. Yes,
yes. And how was that? What was your first campaign?
It was Kevin De Leon for Assembly.
Okay.
So it was, yes, that was, it was, I did Kevin De Leon for Assembly. I did, who else was that year? That was sort of our, my big, that was my big one.
And what year is this about?
2006.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we did.
And so your firm would do basically all communications for these campaigns. You would be doing media,
direct
press
mail,
release, direct mail,
TV ad buys, if you know,
yep,
that were it.
Yep.
We didn't
polling,
we would
too?
Work with, we didn't do the polling, but we worked with a pollster,
right, mm-hmm, right, to determine what the ads would be and all
messaging.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
Exactly.
And how long did you work there?
About 2.5 years, and it was only supposed to be for the cycle.
Oh.
So John was just incredibly busy that cycle.
Okay.
And he just needed help helping manage clients, basically.
Yep.
Candidates, but also the campaign managers.
Yep.
And so it was only supposed to be for the cycle, and we just ended up working really well together. So I stayed on.
For 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And is he still doing that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Does he do just political campaigns, or does he also do corporate?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
I feel like he has done corporate before. So I think, you know,
okay.
Yeah.
And he's a well-known LA communications base. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when you left there, what was next?
Sorrel.
Okay.
Yes. I worked at Sorrel for about 3 years.
Okay.
In the campaign and issues management practice area. We had California State Parks Foundation, Fresh and Easy Neighborhood Markets, Morgan Stanley. We did communications for Morgan Stanley, or their, a couple of their higher profile financial managers in LA. Just a host of different clients.
But there's a lot of people in LA who have, you know, worked or done internships at Sorrel.
Yes. Yes. There
it's
is
such
a
an iconic
strong
firm here.
Yes,
in
it
LA.
Is. It is. And there's a strong alumni network. And some people are still there. I have a very dear friend and colleague that still works there, and I can still bounce ideas off him if I need to.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes we all get together and do alum happy hours.
Oh, yeah, because don't they have an annual event? Is
a
that
holiday party.
Holiday party,
yeah,
okay.
Sometimes, yeah. I feel like it's not as, you can't count on it like you used to be able to count on it.
Okay, well, we'll have to... I'll have to find out why. And then when you left there?
I went to California Grocers Association.
Okay.
So through my time at Sorrel, and I think that's what's so great about...
Were they a client of Sorrel?
No.
Oh, okay.
Fresh and Easy was.
Okay.
So Fresh and Easy was part of California Grocers Association.
Yep.
And Fresh and Easy was a client of Sorrel's.
Okay.
And my client, one of my clients. And I think what's great about consulting firms is you really get a taste of a lot of different, not only a lot of different issues, but at a firm like Sorrel, it wasn't just lobbying or issues management or media.
Yep.
Well, it did all of, so it did all of all of it. Whereas, you know, if you, there's other shops in Los Angeles that are strictly lobbying or
right,
strictly PR.
Right.
So you really could get exposed to a lot of different things. And that's when I discovered that I actually really liked lobbying. I liked government relations. And that's...
More than the PR side.
More than the PR side, more than the campaign side, more than the issues management side, more than the outreach side.
Why?
Coalition
Why
building.
Why do you think that was?
I think because I had had so much experience putting elected officials into office, I was very comfortable with them.
Approaching them.
I was comfortable approaching them, I was comfortable talking to them. A lot of them I knew because mm-hmm. I had worked on their campaigns. Mm-hmm. And that's really the best time to establish a relationship with an elected official is when you're working on their campaign.
Yep.
And so I just, it came naturally to me. I can very naturally boil down an issue into, you know, two sentences, maybe mm-hmm. 3 minutes. Which is really critical. All you get. Yes.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't matter how complicated the issue is. You have to boil it down. I mean, 2 minutes is long. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have 30 seconds.
Yes. Yes. So I just found my niche there.
And your PR background probably was very helpful.
Yeah, it was. It was. I don't do a lot of the media stuff anymore, but yes,
but the ability to take a complicated issue and boil it down.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
And so, and I think just intuitively understanding the concept of messaging,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a campaign, you're only hitting a few things that mm-hmm. really resonate with voters. And it's very similar with an issue, right? I mean, there could be a whole host of reasons why legislators should vote X, but, you know, you really only need two
right.
reasons.
And maybe
so it's
one.
Finding that.
Right.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed lobbying, and
so for them, you were spending a lot of time lobbying City Hall here in LA.
Not for Sorrel, but
I mean,
and that was one
grocers.
Of the reasons. So that's why I went to the grocers.
Okay.
Was it really afforded me the opportunity to lobby? And yes, I was a registered lobbyist at the City of LA and county.
Oh, okay.
And I, you know, and then in other cities. Should we have an issue that required me to spend so much time at the city that I would have to register
okay.
as a lobbyist there?
And explain the difference between when you say City Hall and the county. How do they divide responsibility? What does the county do that the city doesn't do?
So the Board of Supervisors, there's five of them. They used to be called the Kings of LA County. Now it's actually four women, which is awesome. Four women and one man. Their jurisdiction is much larger. So they oversee the county of LA includes the city of LA and then 88 cities that includes the city of LA plus unincorporated areas. And they oversee a lot of the healthcare, hospitals.
So, but like schools would be City Hall.
Schools are LAUSD.
Okay.
Nobody oversees the schools.
Okay. And so the county does, I'm sorry, interrupt.
A lot of healthcare issues, all the hospital,
okay.
health facility management. They do sort of a lot of the early education, preschool
okay.
stuff.
Okay.
They do.
And City Hall would do police, fire for LA.
For LA. I think they just banned selling fur. I mean, they do a lot of things. There's 15 of them. So it's much, you know, granted those districts are still fairly large, but there's 15 city council members. And
right.
so it's much more localized. It's
right.
getting your trash picked up. It's,
right.
you know,
right.
fixing your sidewalk. Some
right.
of the
it's the local concerns.
Basics. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. And then from there, you went on to Mattel.
Yes.
Where you were in charge of how many states?
50.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Local government and all 50 states.
Wow. So how many states did you actually visit on behalf of Mattel?
So Fisher-Price is located in New York.
Okay.
So I went there, and then I've been to Albany. What I would call my problem states, I mean that in the most loving way possible.
Your most active. Most engaged.
Would be Oregon, Washington, obviously California.
Minnesota.
New York. Minnesota, yes. Although we had really great relationships there. So
yeah.
That was good. And also, I mean, when you work for a corporate client, you're not in front like you are when you're in
right,
an association.
Because you would have a contract lobbyist. In
We'd
office.
Have a contract lobbyist, but not only that, we had the Toy Association.
Oh, so you would more often work
fight
for the association.
Our, yes,
okay.
yes, that would sort of fight our battles. Now, when they were getting so complicated or it wasn't going our way, you know, then Hasbro, Lego, Mattel, we'd sort of all go in there and do a lobby trip.
Yeah.
But we really had the Toy Association that was sort of our front and center.
Front and center in these states. Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, Vermont, Connecticut,
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Yep. Yeah.
Maine sometimes.
While you were there, what were some of the issues that you had to deal with?
Mostly it was chemicals in toys.
Okay.
So whether, you know, did that need to be labeled? What were we using? What couldn't we use? Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of sort of managing how we built the product or made the product pretty much. And the issue for us wasn't so much that we were opposed to labeling or, you know, I think we were opposed to telling us which chemicals we could and could not use in toys. Yep. I mean, we went through a very rigorous toy safety program, so we knew they were safe. It was having different standards in different states. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Mattel isn't a direct-to-consumer, not very often. And, you know, Walmart does not have different packages for California and for Oregon. So
if one state were to pass something, you would basically have to do it for all.
You'd have to do it for all.
And what did you like most about that type of job where you're overseeing 50 different state capitals? And
yeah, well, each state is so interesting and so different and has a different culture. And so it was learning that as quickly as possible when an issue cropped up. Mm-hmm. I loved that. I loved the socialization. I mean, all the conferences. Yep. And I had no idea this world existed. I've been just LA and a little bit Sacramento for so long.
Nobody does.
I had no idea this world existed.
So you would go to NCSL, CSG,
yep.
All of the,
yep. Yep, DLCC, RLCC. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And it was just, I mean, the summer, you know, you're traveling all the time, but we take the kids. I mean, it was just, it was really fun. I mean, we did Chicago, when NCSL was in Chicago, I took the kids to Chicago. I think one year DLCC was in Charleston and my in-laws live there. So, you know, we just all went. And it's such a fun group. And as you do it more and more, you become friends and it's just a fun experience. So that, I like multi-state. I hope I get another opportunity at some point in my career to do multi-state again.
You do?
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay.
I think so.
The only complaint I've heard about multi-state is some people say the travel.
I think that if you are in an association, I could see that because you're not only traveling to all these conferences, you're also actually traveling to state capitals to lobby.
Right. Right.
When you work for a corporate, on the corporate side, sort of your in-house,
so
your association
travel.
People are doing all of that work, unless you really have to go up there.
Yeah.
So I've certainly done 24 hours in Albany. You know, I certainly have because, you know, we had a facility headquartered there and, you know, they wanted to hear from us.
Yeah.
But it's far less than sort of my colleagues that were in the Toy Association were doing. Far, far less. And so I think I sort of got the best of both worlds being in-house.
Okay. And now you're at the Burbank Airport.
Hollywood Burbank Airport, yes.
Which you have your, obviously the airlines, which are, you know, members, clients, whatever, however you would refer to them.
Yes, customers.
Customers. And you have the neighborhood, the community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have the FAA.
Also customers, also passengers too.
Right.
Both. Yep.
Right. So
FAA.
Tell us about your current job.
So my current job is I'm the Senior Director of Government and Public Affairs, which is basically heading up external affairs for the airport. Under me, I have communications. So our PIO reports to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wonderful. And then I also have all of the community relations portion of it as well, which also includes, you know, sponsorships and things like that. Our airport authority, so we're governed a little bit differently than other airports. Oftentimes airports are run by cities. LAX, LAWA, is run by the city of LA.
Okay.
Ours is a joint power authority. So it's run by the cities of Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena. That was established in 1977. And we have three commissioners from each city that sit on the commission.
Okay.
And they are appointed by those individual city councils.
Okay.
Some of them are city council members. They appoint themselves. Some, like Burbank, they don't have any city council members that actually sit on the commission.
Okay.
And so that's an interesting setup. And what I'm learning, or at least, you know, my executive director seems to think so. It's a bit of a it's a little bit easier to manage because you're not getting involved in sort of the city politics.
So the executive director reports to that board.
Yes.
Of nine people.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, yeah, so it's so that's an interesting setup. So, you know, my role is really to engage on all levels of government on behalf of the airport, manage issues that crop up, inform commissioners when I need to or solve them or, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, an airport is different in that you're always trying to balance increased service. So like you mentioned, we flew into LAX because we wanted a direct flight. And that is true. I mean, Hollywood Burbank Airport is a regional, it's a regional airport. We're going to hit probably a little over 5 million passengers this year. LAX has 80 million, 85 million passengers. I mean, this is different. We have different issues. We have different environmental footprints. Obviously, environmental issues are a big deal when you live in this area.
Yep.
And so while there's a place for everybody, it's still, we have a balance of trying to keep increasing routes, keep increasing service, increase passengers, because that is how, you know, we're funded. I mean, you're funded by a PFC.
Yourself.
Exactly.
Yep.
While making sure the community is still okay, because, you know, all of these elected officials at the end of the day have to,
respond
they hear
to
from their constituents, right? So,
right.
So it's a balancing act.
How many employees at Burbank Airport?
Oh, gosh. I want definitely over 100. So
okay.
We're actually managed. The Hollywood Burbank Airport is managed by TBI, which is an airport management company.
Okay.
They have maybe 4 or 5 different terminals throughout the U.S. So technically all of the employees, including the executive director, work for TBI.
Oh.
We don't work for the airport. Well, and then the airport authority signs a contract with TBI to manage all of these staffing, all these things at the airport. So I want to say there's a little bit over 100. That includes sort of maintenance, and our police and fire do not work for TBI. Those would be the only
okay.
groups. So,
and which, is there one airline that is your busiest or most
yeah,
active?
Yeah, so Southwest Airlines is about 70% of our traffic.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and Alaska's next.
And then how much interaction do you have to have with the carriers?
I interact with their government affairs people quite a bit. You know, airlines and airports are, sometimes we love each other and sometimes we hate each other.
Yep.
We need each other, but
right.
Sometimes we have different agendas.
Right.
But on things like...
Give us an example of each.
So right now we're working, the South Coast Air Quality Management District has required us to put together, we're calling it an MOU, a memo of understanding, and an air quality improvement plan to try to cut NOx emissions from the airport. South Coast is in a non-attainment level of air quality, and so they have a lot of things to do by certain dates to get NOx emissions down by a large percentage. So they're looking at everything. They look at ports, they look at truck traffic, cargo, and rail, and warehouses, and airports. This was a battle we fought for over a year, because the problem is airports are so federally regulated, and probably 80 to 90% of our NOx emissions is aircraft.
Right.
Nothing we can do about that.
Right.
Nothing we can control about that. Federally regulated. So it's, you know, it's sort of how much further or how much deeper do we need to dig to get really a very small amount of NOx emission reduction for South Coast Air Quality Management District. Now, they're also going after LAX. I mean, they're, you know, we just, there are 5 airports in the basin, and we happen to be one of them. So we have to kind of follow the same regulation that LAX does. And they're obviously the big gorilla in the room. But that's sort of one where we did call on our airline partners, and we're still working with them as we develop this plan, because airlines are very sensitive as to, you know, for ground service equipment, which is, you know, basically the tugs that
yep.
when a plane leaves the gate.
Yep.
you know, for the most part, those should be electric and can be electric, but airlines get a little bit nervous if it's required to be electric. I mean, Southwest is actually one of the better partners and has fully gone electric for most of that stuff. But required and, you know, doing it on your own terms is a little bit different. And so we've been working really closely as we develop these plans to make sure, you know, we're getting NOx emissions that we need to satisfy AQMD, but we're not putting the airlines in a unattainable position. And they're also worried about it spreading.
Right. Okay. Any smaller issues that you have to interact with them on a daily basis? Not daily, but weekly?
Well, so for us, I mean, we certainly have a station manager that's for Southwest Airlines. Anyway, we have a station manager that's based at the airport. Mm-hmm. And I don't deal as much with him, but I, you know, we do all the time. Just, you know, just if something's not working or for what
whatever
a host of different
be.
Reasons. Host of different reasons. We are starting nonstop service on Southwest on November 4th, Burbank to Midway and Burbank to Houston.
Okay.
And we'll work with them to sort of, for the inaugural flight, we might do a cake and we'll probably work with them for
something
some passenger goodwill.
Yeah.
And so just something like that. We do a lot of that kind of stuff too. And you can do that in a smaller airport. I mean, it's much homier, so to speak.
So the carriers are obviously, there's a lot of interaction there. And then with the community, I would imagine there's interaction also.
The airlines really try to stay out of that.
No, but for you.
Yes. I do a lot with the community. We're just a busier airport now. We're building a new terminal. So it'll be on our airport property. It'll just be in a different location. And it's a replacement terminal. It's still going to be the same number of gates. It will be able to accommodate some of the larger aircraft, though.
Okay.
Which we can now, just not every gate can. And this one, every gate will be able to accommodate that. We think that's good. We think, you know, aircraft now are... they're quieter, they're more efficient. So being able to accommodate, you know, that kind of mix at every gate, I think will be beneficial to the region and to the airport. Plus the terminal, I don't know if you've ever been there, but it was built in 1930 and it looks like it was built in 1930. There've been some updates to it, but it's an old terminal.
Well, sometimes the old terminals are easy to get in and out
They are. And everyone,
a lot easier than LAX.
Everyone said, I mean, when we go out on the road and talk about the new terminal and where we are in the process and what we're doing and all these things,
they're like, don't make it too big.
That they, I usually get an expletive in there, but I've heard it many times. Don't mess it up. It's just not usually that kind. So, so we understand. I mean, our airport is convenience, and that's sort of our motto, is convenience elevated. And we understand that's the draw and why everybody wants to use our airport when they can, as opposed to LAX. And because LAX is going through all of the upgrades and infrastructure stuff that they're going through, you know, we think that's one of the reasons why we're getting more traffic. It's just people don't want to deal with it, so they want to come to our airport. So,
well, if you have to get, you know, for us, if we had to get a connecting flight, flying into Burbank would be a lot easier. So we began the conversation talking about your internships. Does Burbank Airport, do you have any internships that you offer, or what suggestions would you have to people who are looking to get some experience in government or campaigns?
Yeah. I mean, I think campaigns are always looking for internships and volunteers. So if there's someone that you just love, or because I think if you're interested in politics, you
That's
probably
a great
know
place to start.
Yeah, you probably know who's running in your area, and which side you support. And I think that's a really good way to get involved very quickly, and you'll just learn so much. And especially if you're smart, people will give you work.
And they need the help.
And they need
the help.
Yep, right. Exactly. I think the other, Santa Clara wasn't, I don't remember. And maybe it was just because I wasn't there the full time. But UCLA has such a strong student government association. And I think that's another avenue, if you're on a college campus, sort of getting involved in that type of organization. you'll meet a lot of people.
Yeah.
I have a friend that he was student president, I want to say student body president of Cal State LA. And you know, he still talks about and still has so many contacts through that
experience.
Yeah. So I really think that's another avenue that I didn't take advantage of, but
getting involved in student government.
Yes. But now that I have seen what can come out of that, I think that's a really good avenue too.
That's a great suggestion. Well, Sarah, thank you very much.
Yeah.
It has been great to sit down with you.
Thanks. It was fun.
Yeah. And thank you for being accommodating. And we'll have to thank Nora, who's been very quiet over
very
there.
Quiet.
Yeah.
We won't right. say why.
No. All right. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
It's been great.
Well, there it is. I hope you enjoyed it. So glad we got to do it while we were out in LA and sit down with Sarah. So if you like our podcast and want to help spread the word, the best thing you can do, and it's easy, is to subscribe to our podcast and leave a comment on wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever it is. If you want additional insights about our guests or upcoming shows, just sign up for the Monday morning coffee with the Lobbying Show at our website, lobbyingshow.com. If you're not already, be sure to follow us on Twitter at The Lobbying Show. You can also find us on Facebook and on Instagram. Now, go petition your government. You might as well. It's yours.